We're holding on Pei Aleph Omer Beis, three lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah a number of cases where a person, we're still talking about Oisav Estinoi, where he shechted the first one, or the second one, you know, as the case may be, and it's not edible for one reason or another. It was Trefa, it was Fra'afa Dezara, etc. Among the ones we mentioned in the Mishnah where the person shechted the Pada Aduma, or we mentioned further on the Egla Arufa. Now, in both cases, as we said yesterday, the mother animal can't be the Pada Aduma or the Egla Arufa. We're talking about the baby animal. So a person shechted then the Pada Aduma or the baby animal, or the Pada Aduma or the Egla Arufa, the Shimon is going to hold that that's not considered a shchita because it's shchita she'ena ru'uya, because that shchita does not result in the animal being able to be eaten. Therefore, he says that's not counted as a shchita, and therefore Oisav Estinoi wouldn't come into play. Whereas the Chachamim said it doesn't matter, shchita is shchita. So now the Gemara says a pora shchata shchita she'ena ru'uya. You're telling me that the pora aduma is not considered considered a shchita she'ena ru'uya, and therefore that according to Reb Shimon it wouldn't go into the dinim of Oisav Estinoi. Well, Hatani, we learn a Braisa, Reb Shimon Omer, Gemara brings us in a number of places in Shas, most recently we had it in near the end of Menachos, Pora Mitama Tumas Oichlin. The Pora Aduma, it has the Tumah of food, because it had, there was a time after it was shechted when you would have been able to eat it. Now, meaning, in other words, Reb Shimon himself holds, and Rashi explains that anything that's any kind of animal that's also bahana, when it's shechted or killed or whatever, then it doesn't have tumas oichlin, because since it's also bahana, then you can't eat it. However, Reb Shimon would say when it comes to the pora aduma, it does have tumas oichlin because there was a period of time even after the shechita when it would have been mortal to eat. And what is that? For Amar Reb Shimon Lakish, Omer Hoyer Reb Shimon, namely, Reb Lakish explains that Reb Shimon would say pora nifkes al gav ma'arafta, the pora aduma could be redeemed from a hekdesh even if when it's already on the pile of wood on which it was shechted. In other words, when the animal is alive, everybody agrees you can be poached because it's still alive. So it's not after all pora aduma is not a korban. It's kodshei bedik habayis. It's bought with the funds that are usually used for the upkeep of the Beis Hamikdash, and here it's being used to buy the pora aduma. But the Chachamim would say that after it's shechted, it's too late to be poached. Reb Shimon says that no. Reb Shimon says that no, even after you shechted it, and even if you didn't actually redeem it, it's still considered to that extent as though it was, so therefore conceivably you would be able to eat it. So we see that Reb Shimon holds that it actually, the shechita, the pora aduma, does result in it being able to be eaten. Now, Rashi points out, wait a minute, the pora aduma is as it is, anybody who's involved with it, it's matame the post it, it's matame people who touch it, it's matame even their clothing, so who cares whether it has tumas oichlin, it has a stronger tumma than that. So Rashi explains, based on a Gemara in Krisis, that for example, suppose a person were to take a piece of the pora aduma and cover it with dough, and the dough itself is less than a kabeza. Now, it's a machlokas who's shown him how much food you need in one place in order to be makabel tumma, but everybody agrees that to receive tumma, or the other way around. When it comes to receiving tumma, everybody agrees. And so it's a machlokas. When it comes to receiving tumma, it's a machlokas. You need a kabeza, or is even a smaller amount of kabel tumma, but everybody agrees that to transmit tumma to something else requires a kazais. So now, suppose you've covered it with a dough of less than a kabeza inside. If you consider the pora aduma to be food, then it combines together with the dough, and therefore, so now you have a full kabeza, and according to the opinions that you need a kabeza to become tamei or be able to become tamei from other food, and according to everybody that you need a kabeza to transmit tumma to other food, then it'll be able to transmit tumma. But if the pora aduma is not considered food, then you have less than a kabeza of food over there, you have less than a kabeza of dough, and therefore there wouldn't be that kind of tumma. So there is a nafkamina whether it has tumas oichlin, and Reb Shimon holds that it does because even after it was shechted, it still can be considered until you actually burn it that it could have been redeemed, and therefore that should be considered food. Tosfos points out a couple of things in this connection. First of all, Rashi had asked, again, why do we care about Tumas Oichlin, if anyway it had the Tumah of being Metame people and being Metame to people who are involved with it. Tosfos points out that's not a question. Exactly that. Only the people who are involved in burning and preparing the Parah Adumah are the ones who become Tameh. Just touching the Parah Adumah itself does not make a person Tameh. So what's Rashi's question? But Tosfos says, okay, maybe what Rashi means is we have a general, there is a general rule, which we're going to talk, about later on in our Masechta in more detail. We touched on it earlier in our Masechta that when you have something which is eventually going to have Tumah Chamura, which is going to be able to give a strong degree of Tumah, even before it reaches that point, then it's still able to transmit Tumah Kala, lesser Tumah. But even then, not really, though, because that just means, in other words, that Tosfos says no, because all that means is, in other words, so it doesn't need to be Mukshu, the Kabbal Tumah. It doesn't need to be wedded with one of the Shiva Mashkin, but no, it's not Metame yet. In any case, the point is that the point is then, so according to that, the point of saying that it has Tumas Oichlin is this business with it's covered with dough. According to Tosfos, you don't need that. Anybody who's not actually involved with preparing the Parah Adumah is not going to become Tomei by touching it, but had we said that it has the Tumah of Nevela, then they would. So therefore, or in any case, we'd say that according to the Shimon, it has the Tumah of food at any rate, from the Tamei other foods. In any case, the point is that according to the Shimon, we see, so now we're talking in our Mishnah according to the Shimon. We're saying that according to him, Shchita Shein Ruya Lo Shma Shchita, and therefore shechting the Parah Adumah is not considered a Shchita. But why? According to him himself, the Parah Adumah, once you shecht it, could be. And the answer is, Amar Shimon Va'Aba, Amar Yechon, Paras Chatas in a Mishnah. You know what? The words Paras Chatas are not part of the Mishnah. In fact, the Mishnah should not have the words Paras Chatas. Because in fact, the Shimon would agree, as we just said, that the Shchita that is considered a Shchita Ruya. Okay. So in other words, we're saying, even though, so there was a version of the Mishnah going around that had Paras Chatas, but now Rav Shimon Bar Abba is explaining to us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that it actually doesn't really belong in the Mishnah. Okay. Now, what about another one? The Egla Rufa, Lav Shchita Ruya. Now, what about the Mishnah had also mentioned when you shecht the Egla Rufa? And again, the Mishnah had said that the Shimon had said that that's not a Shchita Shein, that's a Shchita Shein Ruya, and therefore Osev Espinoy doesn't come into play. But why? Is the Egla Rufa not considered a Shchita Ruya? Said, the Hotzman, we learn in a Mishnah, Nimsa Hurig, Adjula Ta'orif Egla. If what do you bring an Egla Arufa for? So we know, the Torah tells us, at the end of Parashat Shoftim, you find a dead body outside the city. We don't know who killed him. So then the nearest city has to bring an Egla Arufa as a kapara for the city, because as the Gemara says over there, they bear a certain responsibility for not having taken care of people, of wayfarers who are traveling in or near their city. Next, so the Mishnah says, Nimsa Horeg Anshalet Ya'arif, if they find the killer before the Anshalet Ya'arif Egla, before the animal, before the calf is decapitated, and then at that point we don't bring the Egla Arufa anymore, because we bring an Egla Arufa only when we don't know who the killer was. So then, case of a tir of Eder, then the animal can go and graze in the herd together with all the other animals, because the whole point was it was supposed to be a kapara for when we don't know who the killer was. And now that we know before it was decapitated, then no problem, we can go and let it can go on to live a long, happy life. So again, the point is, in other words, so when does it become osur? Or when does it become osur? Only when you decapitate it. So again, we should say, therefore, that if it's shechted instead of being decapitated, then it should be mutter to eat, and therefore it should be considered a shchita ruya. Now, Tosfos points out that maybe you could say, okay, listen, you know, maybe you could say the reason why it goes free, that why the animal goes free, is because they only set it aside having in mind if they don't find the killer. And Tosfos compares it to a case involving Oshem Toli, but Tosfos says that, listen, they don't think it very likely that they're going to find him, so therefore they're marked the shit pretty much unreservedly. So again, why should we say in our Mishnah that the Egla Rufa, if it's shechted, is not mutter to eat? It seems from what we just said that as long as it's still alive, then it's mutter, and that means, in other words, if it were to be shechted instead of decapitated, then it would also be mutter to eat. So, and again, the answer, is Amar Rav Shimon Lakish, Mishum Rav Yana, Egla Rufa in a Mishnah. As a matter of fact, the words Egla Rufa also don't belong in our Mishnah. Now, Tosfos points out there is a machlokas in the Sechta Krisis about that, whether Egla Rufa is, it becomes also while it's still alive or not, and we're going to talk about it a little bit in the Gemara now, but nevertheless, they had a Kabbalah, Rish Lakish had a Kabbalah from Rav Yana, then in fact the words Egla Rufa don't belong in the Mishnah. Rav Yana was actually one of Rebbe's senior Talmidim. He was a member of the transitional generation between the Tanoim and Amoraim. So therefore, so he's saying that he's saying there were versions of the Mishnah that were going around that had Egla Rufa and that had the words Egla Rufa in them. But Rabbi Yana is saying it doesn't actually belong in the Mishnah. Okay. The question is, Mi Amar Rabbi Yana Halchi? But did Rabbi Yana really say that the Egla Rufa is in fact definitively mutter until it's decapitated and it never becomes, there's no time before that when it becomes osur. But Rabbi Yana himself says, Gvul Shamaiti Ba. I have heard that there's a certain limitation, there's a certain time during the Egla Rufa process when it becomes osur bahana, v'shachachti, but I've forgotten what it is. The Nasrin, Chavraya Loimar, but Rabbi Yana says the Chavraya, the Chaverim, my colleagues in the yeshiva, decided that it should be, we call them Chaverim, because as the Rambam points out, the friendship of Talmid Chachamim is a true one, because it depends on Torah, in fact we have in Pirkei Avos, Ava she ain't a Tluya B'Davar, and therefore it's a true and lasting friendship. So the Nasrin, Chavraya Loimar, so Rabbi Yana says, the Chaverim, the members of the Bnei HaYeshiva, decided to say, Yiridosa, the Nachal Esan, Isarta. Once they bring it down to the Nachal Esan, the area where it's going to be decapitated and buried and so forth, at that point it becomes also. So in other words, it's not when it's decapitated, it's even earlier, when they bring it to the Nachal Esan. Rashi explains that Nachal Esan means a valley with hard, rocky ground. The Rambam understands that it means a valley with a stream flowing in it. Whatever the case, Rabbi Yana is explaining, and apparently he agrees with what these Chaverim say, that as soon as it's brought to the Nachal Eisan, then already it becomes osur. Now, if that's so you see there's a point during the animal's lifetime when it already becomes osur b'hana, then why does Rabbi Yana have to say that in our Mishnah, the words Egla Rufa don't belong, because in fact, according to Reb Shimon, the shechita of the Egla Rufa, if instead of decapitating, you sheft it, it would be osur to eat, and therefore it's a shechita sheinu ru'ya. And Rabbi Yana is saying, not so, take those words out of the Mishnah. Instead, why doesn't Rabbi Yana answer very simply? Kan kodem yurida, kan la'acha yurida. That one is talking about before it was taken down to the Nachal Esan, and the other one would be afterwards. So very simple then. In that case, you don't have to say that our Mishnah would be talking about if after it was taken down to the Nachal Esan, somebody shechted it, then we would say it's still also to eat, and Reb Shimon would therefore call it Shechita Sheinu Ru'ya. Why is Reb Yana taking out those words from the Mishnah? Now, Tosfos does point out, though, that after all, we just said before that if the killer was found after the calf was decapitated, then it's also as mashma that up until that point it would still be mutter. So, we'd have to say that maybe that distinction between before and after the Nachal Esan is not valid. But in any case, Rav Yana himself is obviously holding that it is valid. So then, according to him, why do we have to take out the words Egla Rufa from our Mishnah? So the answer is, another point that comes up in this regard, by the way, is Tosfos points out that, why don't we say that in our Mishnah, when it says that he shechted it, actually means that he decapitated it. That we have obviously decapitation is not a valid shechita. It involves chopping off the animal's head, which as we've learned earlier in our Masechta is not a valid shechita. Nevertheless, sometimes there are certain times when the Torah says to kill an animal in an unusual way, and in effect that counts as shechita. Tosfos points out that, for example, you have when it comes to Yom Kippur, you have the Sur La'azazel, which is pushed off a cliff, which is obviously not a valid shechita either. And nevertheless, the Gemara calls it shechita in the sense that, for example, if the mother of this goat had been shechted earlier that same day on Yom Kippur. Let's say there was somebody who was sick, and they had to shecht for them on Yom Kippur, because, of course, Pesach Nefesh is overrides most of the Torah, including the dinim of Yom Kippur. So let's say it happened that the mother was shechted that day for a sick person, then the Sarah La'azazel cannot actually be used, then that Sarah La'azazel cannot be used, because now pushing it off the cliff would be the equivalent of shechting it. So why don't we say the same thing over here, that the shechta of our Mishnah refers to decapitating the Egla Arufa. So Tosfos tries to give an answer, then the Mishnah would have used the word ha'orech, but Tosfos says no, because, I mean, all the other cases in the Mishnah do use the word ha'shoichet. Okay, in any case, the point is that the Gemara is not taking that assumption up. The Gemara is assuming that we mean we're actually shechting the Egla Arufa. Now again, if we say the Egla Arufa So the question is then that the Egla Arufa is mutter as well. So if you say there comes a point in the Egla Arufa's lifetime when it becomes also, namely when you take it to the Nachal Eisam, and after that, if you sheft it, it's also, well, then that explains, then indeed, we could keep the words Egla Arufa in our Mishnah and say that our Mishnah is referring to that case. But if you tell me that, but on the other hand, Rabbi Yana, you're telling me you have to take out these words altogether, implying that there's no time in the Egla Arufa's lifetime when it actually becomes also Bahana, well, then Rabbi Yana seems to contradict himself. So the answer is Amar Pinchas Beidur Ami Anan Mishmei Rav Shimon Lakish Masnin Lo Egla Arufa in a Mishnah. You should know we in all yeshiva learned that it was Rav Shlokish on his own that said that the words Egla Arufa does not belong in our Mishnah. It was Rav Shlokish himself. So here we had before that we quoted that Rav Shlokish quoted it in the name of Rav Yanai, but now we'll say, but now the answer is that no, in fact, Rav Shlokish said it on his own. Rav Yanai, in fact, would disagree and say, like the Chavzaya said, that there is, in fact, a time in the animal's lifetime when it would be still, when it becomes ulcer, and therefore at that point when you shecht it, then it's a shittish aneroid. So what the Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, ki yavin and beira papi. But Ravashi says, when we were in the yeshiva of Rapapi, cash along, we asked on that. Mi Amar Rav Shimon Lakish Hachi. The question is, does Rav Lakish say that? Just like we said before, that we can't, apparently Rav Yana can't have said this point about Egla Arufa ain't a Mishnah, because that would contradict his statement about the Egla Arufa becoming also at a certain point during its lifetime, the same way Ravashi says, in the yeshiva of Rapapi, we had a question that Rav Lakish would also seem to contradict himself. Because we have a discussion as follows. Sipur and Mitzorah. Here you have the two birds that are used for the first part of the Tara of a Mitzorah, as it talks about at the beginning of Parshas Mitzorah. The Kohen has to take two birds, and a bunch of eights eres and azers, and so forth, and he shechts one of the birds, and then mixes the blood, and then the blood mixes with the water, and then he dips all the other things in that one and sprinkles it on the Mitzorah. Now, and then the other one, he sends away and it's free to go. At what point do these birds become also bahanta? Rabbi Yechanan says once you shech the one, in other words, according to Rabbi Yechanan, the one that's going to be sent away free, the Kohen picks which one is which, but whichever one he picks is going to be the one that's shechted. That one is also bahanah, but the other one never became also. Turns out the other one was never also in the first place. Reb Shimon Lakish says no. Once the two of them are bought, both of them are also. Eventually, what you're going to have is the Gemara explains Rashi brings it over here that eventually when the live one is sent away free, at that point it's no longer also bahana, because the Torah wouldn't tell you to send it away, and people might be nichshel in it. Eventually you're going to have somebody might find this bird and then catch it and shecht it to eat it or do whatever with it, and they won't know that's also bahana. So therefore clearly the Torah is matter at bahana after it was sent away. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yechanan, that one never became Osir in the first place. According to Rabbi Yechanan, according to the Shlokish, there's a period of time when it's Osir, from when it was bought until the other one, until it's sent away, and then once it's sent away, it becomes Mutar Bahana again. Now we explain, my time to the Shimon Lakish, why does the Shlokish say that both of them become Osir? If anyway, according to him, the live one is going to be Mutar later on, then why doesn't he agree with Rabbi Yechanan that it never became Osir in the first place? And the answer is because Goma Kicha Kicha the Egla Arufa, because he learns Xero Shava on the word Kicha from the Egla Arufa. By both of them it says that they should buy it. The Lokhu, buy it or take it, the Lokhu Zikmeh Iradi, and the Lokha Hamikar, Shtei Tziporim Chayos. So therefore both of them have this din of becoming Osir while they're alive. Now, the difference is, it actually says that the Egla Arufa, as we said before, there is, after all, something that has to be done between the designation of it and the decapitation, and then bringing it down to the Nachal Eisan where the ceremony is going to take place, as opposed to by the booths. You don't really have that. So therefore, what it is the booths. You don't have any significant action that has to be done between when they're designated, when they're taken, and when one of them is affected. And therefore, we're going to say, says Rish Lakish, that it becomes Osir as soon as they're bought. As opposed to by the Egla Arufa, we're not going to say it's also from when it's bought, only as we said before, from when it's taken to the Nachal Eisan. Anyway, the point is, Tosfos points out that actually the Gemara and Kiddushin ends up learning from a different limud. In any case, the point is that the Shlokish agrees, obviously, that the Egla Arufa does become ulcer at some point during its lifetime. And in fact, he's using that as a basis to say that the same thing when it comes to the birds, that they both become ulcer during their lifetime, and one of them later on becomes mutter only when it's sent away. So clearly, the Shlokish also holds that. That the Egla Arufa, there comes a point in its lifetime when it's Osir, so therefore it should be considered Shittishen and Roya. So what do you mean? Egla Arufa in a Mishnah. So what do you mean that he would be saying that you have to take out the words Egla Arufa from the Mishnah? So Gemara says, Ela Amar Rabbi Ba'aba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Egla Arufa in a Mishnah. So the answer is no. Rabbi Ba'aba says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that Egla Arufa is not part of the Mishnah. But Rish Lakish would disagree and say it does. So in other words, the underlying machlokas would be, is there in fact a time during the animal's life, during the Egla Arufa's life, when it becomes osir? If we say that yes, then you could still keep the word in our Mishnah, that Egla Arufa would in fact belong over there. But if you say that no, there's no time during the Egla Arufa's lifetime when it becomes ulcer. It becomes ulcer only when you decapitate it. Then indeed, our Mishnah would have to that you couldn't make our Mishnah work because there'd be no way to say the shchita of an Egla Arufa would be shchita shein roya. So in other words, it comes out in the end that Rabbi Yanai and Rish Lakish would be the ones who would actually say that the words Egla Arufa do belong in our Mishnah, that there is a time during the Egla Arufa's lifetime when it becomes Osir Bahana, and then if you shecht it any time after that point, then it's a Shchita Shein Roya. Whereas according to Rabbi Yechanan, we would say Egla Arufa in a Mishnah. We would say that, in fact, you have to take out the words Egla Arufa because he disagrees with that premise and says that the Egla Arufa actually becomes Osir only when it's decapitated and not before. Again, all of that is only necessary. A point to the Pshim and a point to the Chum, it doesn't matter. They don't care whether the Shchita is Ru'uya or not. Shchita is Shchita. So we said in the Mishnah, if you didn't do Shchita at all, then it wouldn't be considered a valid Shchita. For example, we said if it became Nevela during the Shchita or Neucher or Ma'akir, then it wouldn't be considered a Shchita. But if a proper Shchita was done, then the Chacham say we don't care whether that actually makes the animal Mutter to eat or not. Mishnah says, "Nayim shalachu paro uvna." If two people buy, one buys the mother cow and the other one buys the baby. Eizah shalachach rishin yishchit rishin. So whichever one bought first has the right to shecht first. V'im kodem asheni. But if the second one goes ahead and shechts first, kona. So the one will shecht it now, and the other one will have to wait till tomorrow. V'im kodem asheni. But if the second one jumps ahead and goes and shechts before the first one. Zocha, then he was Zocha, namely, in other words, okay, he has the meat, we're not going to penalize him or anything, and he has the meat and he's able to eat, and the other one is going to have to work according to the, is going to have to wait till the next day. So the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yosef, in Dinitz now. So Rabbi Yosef is saying, what we're talking about Dinim Mominus. So Reuven and Shimon, both the two respective animals, and they come to Beis Din. And in other words, we don't mean as far as Isser v'Heter. We don't mean, in other words, Rashi explains, the Mishnah doesn't mean as far as Isser v'Heter. We don't mean that if they agree among themselves. So in other words, the Mishnah is not saying the first one has to shecht first and the other one has to wait till tomorrow. If they want to agree mutually between themselves, Reuven will tell Shimon, you know what, I can see you need the meat more badly than I do. You go ahead and shecht today. I'll wait till tomorrow. Sure, there's no problem with that. What the Mishnah means is as far as a din Torah. If Reuven and Shimon come to Beis Din, and each one is saying, I want a shecht today, so we're going to tell them, so Beis Din is going to tell them, whichever one bought first is going to get shecht first. Because, after all, Rashi points out the logic behind it is if the original owner had not sold the second one to Shimon, if he had kept it for himself, then he would have sold Reuven, the first the buyer, the right to shecht the one that he bought. The seller certainly wouldn't be able to say, yeah, but I want to keep this other one and I want to shecht it today and you have to wait till tomorrow. Obviously, it's not that way. So therefore, so it means that basically he bought it with that condition. So now when you have two different buyers, then the Beis Din is going to tell them the first buyer has the first right to shecht. There are Rishonim who also learn that it means also that there are Achronim who learn also that it means that that in other words it's not like you have to go and start checking in advance. You don't have to start asking by the seller, did you sell the mother or the baby of this? We're going to have tomorrow, Baz Hashem, we're going to talk about there are certain times of year when you need to do that. But what we're saying is, in other words, that we're talking about exactly that, where they both come to Beis Din. And so now they both know that there is this issue of Oseh Vestinoi. So basically, we'll tell them whichever bought first gets the shecht first. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Im Kodem Asheni, if the second one does go ahead and shechts first, Harei Zeh Zoreh V'Nisker, then he's an eager person. He's a quick person, and he gains. What does that mean? Zoreh Zoreh Avedi Sorah. He's Zoreh. He's quick in the sense he didn't do an Isser, because this way there's no possibility of him being over on Oseh Vestinoi. V'Nisker, and what does he gain? The Kol Chobisra, because now he's able to meet the meat. He's able to eat the meat that day. One thing is though, Taz and the Shach and different other Achronim talk about, does this apply, when would we say that he's Zoriz Venisker? The Taz points out that if they bought from one person and then one of them jumped ahead and jumped the line and shechted, then no, we wouldn't call him Zoriz Venisker. On the contrary, he's doing something wrong. Here they bought from the same person, and that same person, as Rashi had said, if he had sold only one animal, then automatically he gives along with it the right to shecht at that day, and you're jumping in and taking away and preempting that guy's right, that wouldn't be right. So therefore, so the Taz learns that actually that it would only be, that this is, when would we say he's Zoriz Veniska is only if they bought from two different people. So if they bought from two different people, neither one has rights over the other. So therefore, now if the second one, so even then, Beis Din would tell them, still the one who bought first should have the right to shecht first. But now we can say that if the second one jumped ahead and shechted first, then he's a Zoriz Veniska. But the Taz learns that if they bought from one person, then on the contrary, we would call him a Choyte. He stole the schus of the first one. On the other hand, the Shach learns that not. The Shach learns that that even in that case, we can still call him Zoriz Venisker. Just means the Hatchila, he shouldn't be doing it, but for the Eved, if he did it, we can still call him a Zoriz Venisker. There can also be the Pre-Chodesh and the various other Achronim talk about that we can call him a Zoriz Venisker when he didn't specifically hear from the first one that he plans to shech today. So therefore, so if now he goes ahead and shechts, then he's a Zoriz Venisker. But if he knows, if he actually heard, let's say we just said he was in Beis Din, and he clearly heard that Reuven wants to shecht today, then no, he has no business jumping ahead and shechting, then we wouldn't call him a Zoriz Venisker for that. The Mishnah says, Shochat Parav Achakach Shnei Boneh. A person shechted one cow, and then he shechted its two, and then he shechted its two children. So then, Sofeg Shmoinim, so that he's going to have to absorb 80 blows, meaning he's going to get double Malkus, because he did two different actions of Issa. He shechted the Paro, which is Oisai, and then he did two different Benois, and therefore he's Chayv Malkus for each one. So, in other words, when he shechts the mother, then automatically it means at that point he becomes also to shecht each of its children, and therefore, so now he's done two oisiv es b'nois, so therefore he's getting double malchus. But what about shachat shnei b'nei b'achakach shlata? But what about the other way around? If he first shechted the children, which there was no issue of oisiv es b'nois yet, because there's no issue to shecht two sibling animals on the same day. So if he shechted those, b'achakach shlata, and then he shechted the mother, well, then he only did one action of Isser, so therefore Sofik is our volume, so therefore he's getting 40, he's getting one set of Malkus. And now, we've been assuming throughout Perek that, of course, when it comes to Oisiv Espino, the order doesn't matter whether we shech the mother and then the baby, or the baby and then the mother, but now the Gemara is going to actually take up where exactly we know that. After all, the Torah says Oisiv Espino, maybe the Isser is only to do the mother and then the baby, and here in our case we have the babies and then the mother. Anyway, so that's how it is, he gets Malkus. Next, continues the Mishnah. Shchata ve'es bita ve'es bas bita. What about if he shechted three generations, the mother, and then what about if he shechted the mother ve'es bita, and then her daughter, ve'es bas bita, and her granddaughter or grandson. For the third one, it doesn't really matter whether it's a male or a female. Only as far as the earlier generations, like we talked about earlier in the parak, did we say that it's daft for the females, or did we say like Hananya that it includes the males as well? Whatever the case. So now he was over twice, because now he was over twice. He's been two different shittis with each one of which he was over on. Oisav Espinoy, Sofik Shmoinim, so therefore he's getting double Malkus. Shochta ves bas bita v'achakach shochat bita. However, the other way around, if he does the grandmother, then the granddaughter, and there's no issue in that yet, because the issue of Oisiv Espinoy only applies to parent and child, not to grandparent and grandchild, v'achakach shochat bita, and then he shechted the middle generation, so now it was only one action of issue, so figures out volume, therefore he's getting one set. Therefore, he's getting one set of malchus, because the fact is, it was one lav and one hasra and one maisa. So therefore, we can't be mechayev. In other words, in the other cases, there were two different maisim. When he did the para and then the two children, each one of them is a separate maisa of shvita, and there can be a separate hasra for each one. And the same way, when he did the mother and then the daughter and then the granddaughter, each one, the daughter and the granddaughter, is a separate maisev isser, and therefore he's getting malchus separately for that. But here, the fact is, even though it is true, of course, by shechting this middle generation, now he's triggering two oisiv espinois, one because it's the daughter of the mother, and one because it's the mother of the granddaughter, one because it's the daughter of the grandmother, and the other one because it's the mother of the granddaughter. Nevertheless, the fact is, it's only one lav and one maisa and only one hasra, therefore the Chachamim say that he gets only one set of malchus for it. But Sumchus says in the name of Rameir that in fact in this case he's going to get double malchus because the fact is he was over twice over here. He was over two different Isurim. So Rashi and Tosis explain that now what about the earlier case in the Mishnah? What about when he shechted the two children and the mother? Would Sumchus also hold over there again? They're also, you could argue that it's two oisiv es b'nois, because now it's the oisiv for each of the two b'nois. Would Sumchus disagree in that case as well and say that he gets double malchus? Rashi and Tosis learn that yes. And in fact, the Mishnah just waited until the end to say that Sumchus says there are cases where the Tanakhama says he would get one Malkus, and Sumchus is telling us that he would get two, but in fact, it would be not only this last case of the grandmother, daughter and granddaughter, but also in the earlier case of the Mishnah, of the two children and the mother. That's according to Rashi and Tosfos. On the other hand, the Ra'or and the Ran say that no, because the difference is that in the last case, the fact is you have two different relationships over there. You have Oisoy Bnoi and you have Bnoi and Oisoy. But the first one, really, it's two instances of Bnoi and Oisoy, so even Sumchus might agree that in that case you've got only one single Malkus. Okay. So the Gemara says, first of all, why in some of the cases of our Mishnah where you have Oisiv Es B'noi, and we're saying that the baby was shechted first, why should he be getting Malchus? Oisiv Es B'noi, Amar Rachmana, the Torah says you can't shecht oisa ves benoi, which implies in that order, first oisa and then benoi, v'loi benoi v'oisa. So not benoi and then oisa. So where do you even get in the first place that a person should be chayav malchus for a case like that? And the answer is lo sakadai. You can't think that way. The Tanya, we learn in Braisa, when the pasuk says oisa ves benoi, so the Braisa says ein li ela oisa ves benoi. So you would know only that it means exactly in that order, first the mother, then the baby. Oisa ves imaminayin. How do we know that it's also in the order if he does first the baby, then his mother? And again, according to Hanania, also the father. So how do we know? So like this, true omer lo sishchak tu, since the Torah says you plural should not shecht. Then it means, in effect, the Torah is addressing two different people. The one who's shechting the mother and the one who's shechting the baby, and saying that both of them are going to be awesome. Now, the question is, why? The first one is perfectly mutter to shecht. So, how could the Torah be addressing two different people with this issue? No, when you have three generations, like we said in the Mishnah, where Reuven is about to shecht a cow, Shimon is about to shecht its mother, and Levi is about to shecht the original cow's son. So yeah, so the three people over here are about to shecht three different generations. And so the Torah is addressing the last two of them. So the last, so the second and third are going to be chayav. Because they're going to be doing Osev Eskimoi. Now, why don't we say, so Rashi says, why can't we say that it's a mother and the two children? Because obviously, then it's poshut. There'd be no difference. If the Torah is telling you, you can't check the mother and its children, then obviously, no matter how many children there are, it's still going to be the same issue over and over again. So the same way as, so if you have Reuben is about to check the mother, and Shimon and Levi are about to check the two children, of course Shimon and Levi are going to be chayiv. We don't need a special poshut to imply that. And on the other hand, Rashi also goes on, if it was talking about, also with three generations, if it's in that order, first the Parah, and then her daughter, and then her granddaughter, then of course you have two Osev Espinoz, and again, there's no Chiddush in it. Necessarily, we have to be talking about that you have one person is about to shecht a cow, and then you have two other people, one is going to shecht its mother, one is going to shecht its baby, and the Torah is warning them, you should know, once Reuven shechts his cow, then you, Shimon and Levi, are now going to be also to shecht its mother or its baby, respectively, and each of you is going to be chayav malchus if you do. So that would be the chiddush. So in other words, we see from that, clearly then, that a person is chayav, whether it was mother and then baby, or whether it was baby and then mother, because in our case, you have exactly that. If Reuven is shechting the middle generation, the cow, and we're telling Shimon, you who are about to shecht its mother, don't do that, you're going to be over, then that shows. Why would he be over? Because you have the baby and then the mother. Showing the baby and then the mother is also awesome. Okay, so the Gemara says, but you're learning this drasha from the fact that it says lo sishchatu chaimi boi le legufay. You need the words lo sishchatu le legufay to tell you in the land of shech oisiv es benoi. And the answer is im kain. If that's all the Torah meant, lichtiv lo sishchot, then it could have said in the singular, you singular should not shech. My lo sishchatu. Why would it say lo sishchatu in plural? Showing us that you have a case where you have two different people about to shecht after one of them has already shechted, and the Torah is warning them both of them are going to be chayav malchus. And again, as it actually said, by elimination, the only case we can be talking about is where the middle generation was shechted first, and now the generation on either side are now also to shecht. So therefore, so we can learn that. We don't need the word. We do need legufoy, but for that, it could have said lo sishchot in the singular. Okay, the Gemara says, "Vakatni boilei." Still, on the face of it, don't you need the Loshen Rabim, the word sishchatu, to teach us something else? The e kos rachmona lo sishchot. Had the Torah written only in the singular, then you would think the whole issue is only if one person is shechting both mother and baby. Shreiloi, but not if two people. So how would you know, Bachlal, that all these cases we've been talking about, where you have Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven is shechting one animal, and Shimon is shechting the other one, and we're saying that Shimon, who shechts second, is going to be chayev, maybe not. Maybe if the Torah told us in the singular, then it would mean that only if Reuven himself shechts both mother and baby as he chayav malchus. So we need the word sishchatu to tell us that it applied even across two people. The first one triggers the isser, and the second one actually does the isser and is chayav malchus for it. So for that reason, the Torah writes lo sishchatu to mean that even if it's two different people. So we need it for that. How we also have it for this drasha of that it means that when you have, again, the middle generation and then the mother and baby respectively. And the answer is Im Kain. If that was so, if the Torah just wanted to tell us that two people can, that even with involving two people, the Isser is triggered, lichtav lo yishchatu. It should say, lo yishchatu. They should not shecht. Or a different the Lavush says that maybe it should be yishchatu. They should not be shechted. They should not be shechted regardless. My was sishchatu, but why does it say you should not sheft, implying that you two people have both done isurim, shema min atarki, therefore you can learn both, that there are in fact, it is an isur on two people, and it's also that the isur is even when the middle one was shefted first, and then you have the two other people want to sheft its mother and its baby respectively. So we see that in fact the isur is in fact on bnoi and then oisuri as well. Okay? We said in the Mishnah, Shechtavas Vaspita Vahula, we had the case where you shechted the grandmother and the granddaughter and then the daughter, and we said that Sumpus holds that he gets double Malkus. And the Chachamim said, only one. And then again, we had the Machloikas who showing him where the Sumpus would also argue in the earlier case of our Mishnah involving the mother and the two babies. Anyway. Omalei Abaye L'Rabbi Yosef, my time it is Sumpus. Abaye asked Rabbi Yosef, why does Sumpus hold that he's Chayav two Malkus? There's two ways of looking at it. Kosava Sumfos, is it because Sumfos holds in general, not just as far as Osev Es Benoi, but more generally? Suppose to take a different example, a person would eat two possessions of Chela in one period of unknowingness, and therefore he's Chayav Chatos. So Chayav Shtei Chatos, he would actually be Chayav two Chatos. In other words, the Sumfos hold that each Kizayis is Chayav Chatos by itself. And that would also mean, therefore, so that's the show you, he would be chayav two chatos. And then the parallel would be if he does it b'mezid, even though there was only one hasra, and even though it was only one lab, he'd still be chayav two malchus. So is it that Sumchus holds that way? That it's not just something specific over here by Osev Es Benoi, but more generally, Sumchus holds that any time a person does two Maisim of Isser, even if it's the same exact Isser, even if it's all with one Hasra, then he's Chayev separate Malkus for each one. And Abaye says, Uvedinu Delishim Inin Ba'alma. And in fact, if that were the case, then Sumchus should not just be telling us that specifically here in Chulin, as far as Osev Es Benoi. In that case, then Sumchus should be telling us, or the composer of the Mishnah should be telling us that Sumchus holds this way even in other areas of Halacha. The Haidu Kamash Malon Baha. So then why would the Tana be mentioning it specifically over here? Let's tell you how far the Rabbanon go to Afakav the Gufun Mukhlokin, because even though here it's separate bodies, in other words, it's one thing, for example, Chela, you can't really say, I mean, if I eat a Kazayas of Chela, it's a Kazayas of Chela, but it's not really a whole separate body of an animal or anything. But here you're actually talking about two different parts. Here you're talking about that he shechted the mother and then the granddaughter, and so far there was no Isser. And now he shechted the middle generation. And therefore there are two parts that are implicated over here in creating this issue of Osev Es Benoi. And even so, the Chachamim would say, Patri Rabbanan, they patri him from two Malkus and say he's chayav only one Malkus. So we would say, in other words, the reason why the Mishnah mentions Sumchus's opinion specifically over here is because not so much because of Sumchus's opinion, but to tell us how far the Chachamim go in their opinion, that even in a case like this, they would patter him, and how much more so in the case of the two Kizasim. So Abaye says, that's all one way of looking at Sumchus's opinion. So it wouldn't be something specific to Osev Es Benoi. It would be something more general. Oy Dilma, or Abaye continues, maybe Kosava Sumchus, Ochol Shnei Zeis Chelav Behelam Echad Ein Chayv Al Achas. That no, if it was true Kizdeisim of Chelav, then indeed he would be Chayv only one Chatas if it was the Shoygig, and it was all during one period of unknowingness. And the same way that if it was the Mazid, then and the same way that it was if it was the Mazid, then he would be Chayv only one Malchus. But But you know why he'd be mechayev over here? However, gufin mechlokin, because they're from two different gufin. Because again, the middle generation is the middle generation is related in two different ways. It's the daughter of one, it's the mother of the other, and therefore, specifically in a case like that, sumchus would say that he's chayev double malchus. But in a case of, and here you have also where the Ra'ah and the Ran point out that over here you really only have exactly over here you have two different shemus of Issur, Oisai and Benoi, and Benoi and Oisai, and therefore Sumchus would be Mechayev, as opposed to again earlier in the Mishnah when we had the mother and the two babies where both of them are Oisai and then Benoi, or the other way around, the two babies and then the mother where both of them are Benoi and Oisai, then maybe Sumchus would agree that it's only one Malchus according to this way of looking at it. Again, as we said before, Rashi and Tosfos disagree and say that Sumchus would argue in both cases. Anyway, the point is, so how do we understand Sumchus? So we're saying that in general, Sumchus would say any time a person does the same issue twice, then he's getting double malchus, or is it only in this case because gufin muflokin, because it's related to two different animals, and therefore you can call it two different issues. So the answer is, yes, as a matter of fact, Sumchus would actually hold that even in the case of the two kazesim of chaylev, then he'd actually be chayev two chatois, and if it was b'mezid, then he'd be chayev two malchus. So we don't care, gufim mechlokim or not. So Rabbi Yosef tells Abaya, your first option is correct. In fact, Sumchus would hold this not only as far as Oisim Esbenoi, but in general throughout the Torah, he would hold this concept. The only reason the Mishnah presents their machlokis over here is because to tell us that the Chachamim would say even by gufim mechlokim that it's only one malchus. And so the Gemara says, Mimai, how do we know that that's how Sumchus holds? So the answer is Midetznad. Because we learn in a Mishnah, or on the side over here, it says it should really be Midetanya, because it's actually a Braisa. Hazareya Kilayim Loikin. When a person plants Kilayim, then he gets Malchus. So what does that mean, Kilayim? So it sounds like it means that he does two different, it sounds that it means that he does, that he plants Kilayim and then again plants Kilayim again. So what does that mean? My Loika. So what does that mean that he gets Malchus? Ilayim Loika Achas, you mean that he gets one Malchus? Shita. Obviously, a person is chayav malchus for planting Kilayim. It's a chiyud lav in the Torah, and there's none of the usual, you have various criteria that can make that a lav is not chayav malchus, but none of them apply to planting Kilayim. My Kilayim. And what would the Braisa mean by repeating the word Kilayim? Elapshita beis malchus. Obviously, therefore, the Braisa has to be talking about that it means that he's getting two malchus, that he's getting a separate malchus for each planting of Kilayim. So now, but Maya Skinnan, so now we have to continue, and we have to ask, well, what is the scenario when we would be saying that he gets twice malchus? Do we mean that he first planted one Kilayim and then he planted another one? And each one they gave him a separate Hasra for? We don't need the Braisa to be telling us that. Tanena, we learn clearly in a Mishnah. Now, the Ramban also adds, the point is that we shouldn't say that the Chiddush is just that he planted twice Kilayim and it just gets one time Malchus, because the expression in the expression Loike, in other words, the Chiddush is that he's getting Malchus at all. But what's the Chiddush? Of course he's getting Malchus. So obviously then the Chiddush must be actually he's getting two Malchus. But the Maya Skin, and Ilayim B'Zeh Hazeh B'Shtei Asrois, do we mean that he planted first one Kilayim and then the other one, and each time they gave him a separate Asra? Tanena, well then we have a clear Mishnah already that tells us that it's not so, or that he gets double malchus for that. Nozer shoyis yayin kol hayom. When you have a nozer who's drinking wine all day, and they gave him asura ein chayav al achas, and he's getting one malchus. But omru lo al tishne v'lu shoyse. But if they keep on warning him, don't drink, and he drinks al tishne v'lu shoyse, and each time they give him asura, and each time he drinks wine, then chayav al achas v'achas, and he's chayav malchus for everyone. So we already have the concept that it clearly says that that when a person does the same istur over and over again, and there's a separate hasra for each one, then it's getting separate. Then it's getting separate models. Now, to be sure, Tosfos points out there are many braises that recap or restate what it says in a Mishnah, but at least then what you should have is, given that the Mishnah presents this gives the example involving a Nazir, then the Braise, if it wants to expand on the Mishnah, should be giving the same case involving a Nazir. It shouldn't bring in a whole new case involving Kalai. So obviously, therefore, the Braise cannot be just telling us the fact that he gets extra Malkus for the number of times that he does it with separate Hasidahs, because there'd be no Chiddush in that over the Mishnah, and again, there'd be no reason for the Braise to give us a whole separate scenario than we had in the Mishnah. Evidently, that must mean that he's planting two types of Kalayim in one at one time and all with one Hasidah. So in other words, he takes one hand, in one hand, he has, let's say, a wheat grain and a grape kernel, and in the other one he has a barley seed, he has a barley grain and a grape kernel. So he's doing them at the same time, and they gave him one hasra. Tosfos says it doesn't have to mean both of them, it can mean one or the other. Either it's vasachas or it's one hasra. On the other hand, Rashi doesn't learn that way, apparently, because Rashi would hold that if it was done separately, because he wouldn't get double malchus, the first hasra doesn't cover the second one, they would have to give him a separate hasra for it. Anyway, so now that we've established so far by process of elimination, we've shown that this braisa that says when a person plants kilayim loike, so we understand right now what it means is he planted two types of kilayim at the same time with one hasra, according to Rashi, both at the same time and one hasra, according to Tosfos, same time or one hasra, whatever. Then he's getting double malchus. Well, now we have to ask. Mami, which Tana would this be like? Elaim Rabbanim, the Pligi Alei de Sumpus, would it be the Chachamim who disagree with Sumpus in our Mishnah? Of course, where they say that he's chayiv only one Malkus for shechting when he shechts the middle generation. Well, why? Why would they be chayiv two Malkus in the other case? Hashto, Mahosin, the Gufim, the Chlokim, Patri Rabbanim, if even in the case of the animals, where it's separate Gufim, and still the Chachamim said, because the fact is, the middle animal was only one act of Shechita. And then, so even though it's related to two different animals that trigger oisav esvenoi, nevertheless, the fact is it was only one action of shita and patri rabbanon and gufan lochlochin. Never, even though it's related to separate gufan patri rabbanon, and nevertheless, the chum patri him from two malchus. How much more so by kilayim where there's no gufin? So how much more so then he should be chayv only one? Ela lav sumchasi. Therefore, evidently, by elimination, this braisa must be like sumchasi. Well then, so the Gemara says. So there's Rabbi Yosef's proof. That Sumchus's din has nothing to do with Gufim Mochlokim or not. Even if, for example, in the example that Abaya gave before involving two Kazesim of Chelev, then Sumchus would hold that in fact he is high of two Malkus, even though it was all one action and one Hasra. And therefore, so in our Mishnah, therefore he's Machayev too, but not only over here when Gufim Mochlokim, but even in cases where Gufim Mochlokim is not a factor. Okay, the Gemara says, Loi, though, that's not necessarily a valid proof. Maybe, in fact, this braisa about the person planting two types of kalayim is according to the Rabbanan. So even the Rabbanan would hold that he gets two malchus in this case, because you're going to say that, wait, there's not much of a chiddush that if he does them one, so in other words, the braisa would be talking about that he did them one after the other, and there were separate hasras. You're going to say that there's no chiddush in that because we already know that from the Mishnah in Masechta Nazir. So Umilsa Agavofri Kamashimon, you could say the Braisa just wants to tell us something. By the way, that you should know a person can be chayav malchus for two different types of kilayim. For example, as Rashi had said, wheat, a wheat grain together with a grape seed, and a barley grain together with a grape seed. Each of them is equally chayav. What would be the point? La poki v'dirab Yoshia, namely. And with that, the Braisa would be wanting to tell us, not like Rabbi Yoshua, which Rabbi Yoshua holds, which we have in a few places in Shas, including we're going to have it towards the end of our Masechta, that Rabbi Yoshua holds, when is a person chayav for planting kilayim, ad shi yizrach chito, sort of a chayotzon, mapolus achas, mapolus yod. He holds that a person is chayav for kilayim only if he plants a wheat grain and a barley grain and a grape seed all at one time, all from one hand. Because in other words, Rabbi Yoshia holds that when the pasuk says, lo sizrak kamach kilayim, you're not allowed to plant your vineyard kilayim. So Rabbi Yoshia understands that it means that it has to be, in order for a person to be chayav malchus, it means that he's planting the vineyard at the same time that he's planting kilayim. So therefore, so it would have to be that he's planting all three to be chayav. So in other words, it has to be wheat and barley, which together themselves are kilayim, and he's planting them together with a grape seed, which is also kilayim. So now, is he chayav at all? So Tosfos discusses that over here. He won't be chayav for kilayim kerem unless he does all three. But Tosfos says, even Rabbi Yoshia would agree that he's chayav for kilayim zroim just by planting a wheat and a barley grain together, for example, because that would definitely be kilayim. On the other hand, Rashi elsewhere says that no, even Rabbi Yoshia would pass to him even from kilayim zroim. In any case, the Braisa could be telling us that not like Rabbi Yoshua's opinion, that in order to be chayav for kilayim kerem, it has to be that he's planting two different seeds, two different kernels or seeds or whatever, together with a grape seed, but rather even just one of them by itself with a grape seed is already chayav malchus. And now Rabbi Yoshua agrees, of course, that there are, that other kinds of kilayim kerem are also awesome. If you have wheat growing new grapevines or barley growing new grapevines, it's definitely also. He just says there's no malchus for kilayim kerem unless he plant the three of them together. In any case, the Braisa may be telling us not like Rabbi Yoshia, and therefore, so in other words, the chiddush of the Braisa is not the point of being chayav double malchus. The chiddush is that he's chayav malchus at all for kilayim kerem, which according to Rabbi Yoshia he wouldn't. So therefore, this Braisa could very well go according to the Chachamim, and we can't bring any proof from it for what Sumchus's opinion is. Okay. So the Gemara says, fine, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof of what Sumchus holds. Later on in Arma Sechta, we're going to learn in the seventh paragraph of Arma Sechta is going to be about the dinim of Gidan Nosha. Now you have, again, Gidan Nosha is something a person has Chayav Malchus for, but you have an animal has two Gidan Noshas, so it's got two thighs. So a Mishnah says over there, Ocho Mizek Kazayis Mizek Kazayis, if a person eats a Kazayis from each one of the Gidan Noshas, so if it's Shemayim, then he's getting double Malchus because he ate two different things. Rabbi Yehuda Oima, in a Sefik Allah Goyim, Rabbi Yehuda says he gets only one Malchus. Because later on the Gemara is going to explain that Rabbi Yehuda holds that Gidan Nosha applies to only one thigh and not the other. Now again, let's go through the possibilities. Heichi Dami. So in what case would the Tanakama require two malchus? Ilema b'zachazef. Are you telling me that if he eats them one after the other, or the shte asuras, and each time they gave him a separate asura, don't eat from this gidan nosha, you're going to get malchus, my time is the Rabbi Yehuda. Then why would Rabbi Yehuda say that he's chayav at all? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a suffix. The Gemara explains that when we get to that, and when we get to that next week, there's the Shem, that Rabbi Yehuda has a suffix which thigh the issue of Gidan Nosha applies to. In fact, the Gemara says over there that he says that the Torah is asking only one, v'hadas machlas, and he says das outweighs and says that it should be the one from the right. So the Gemara says, that does he mean that it's actually that he figured out Alpi Torah, or does it just mean logically it would seem so, but we don't necessarily know for sure. So Rashi explains that you have like this in that Gemara again. Rabbi Yehuda says it applies to only one, and the Torah doesn't specify which one. But das machlas, and then das outweighs it and tells us that it would apply to the right. So the Gemara asks over there, what does Rabbi Yehuda mean when he says das machlas? Does he mean das Torah? Does he mean that he actually figured out something that the Torah itself implies that it applies only to the right, or does he mean? Or does he mean just that? Does he mean that he still has a suffer? Das noita, logic would dictate that if the Torah is going to apply it to one, it would be the right, as the Gemara explains over there why he would say that, but there's no actual source for it in the Torah. Now, in that Sylvia, the Gemara does not use the Mishnah that we're quoting over here to answer the question. So obviously, therefore, the Gemara is assuming that it still remains a suffer. And that we're not talking about two hasuras. Otherwise, each hasura would be a suffix. When they give him hasura, don't eat from this gidan nosha. We don't know whether, in fact, he's going to be chayev for eating it or not. And we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a hasura suffix is not a valid hasura. It has to be that when they give masura, they know for sure that what he's going to be doing is going to be over on an isur daraisa. So we can't be talking about that he ate from the gidan nosha of the right and the gidan nosha of the left, and each one they gave him a separate hasura, because then if we were to say that, and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah could not be saying that he's chayiv one malchus, because according to him he wouldn't be chayiv any malchus because it's a hasura suffix. And we know that, the Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa. Suppose you have a person where there's a suffix, who was his father? So let's say, for example, you have a woman remarried, woman got divorced and remarried within 3 months, and then she had a baby, and as we have in many places in Shas, you have now a suffix whether this baby is. So now she gave birth after 7 months. The question is it a 7 month baby from her second husband, where a baby can develop in 7 months, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, or is it a 9 month baby from the first one? So the result is this child has a suffix throughout his life. Which of these two men is his father? Whether we'd be able to resolve that nowadays with DNA testing is a whole other question, which we're not going to get into right now. There's quite a bit of discussion among the poskim when we accept DNA and when not. But in any case, let's say before they had that, so now he has a suffix throughout his life. Which one is his father? Now we know the Torah tells us that if a person hits his parents, then he's chayev, or curses them, then he's chayev misa. So the Benaisa says, so suppose now if we hit and injured one of these two people who might be his father, and then hit the other one. Now each one that gave him a hasura, don't hit him, he might be your father. Or we cursed one and then they cursed the other, and each one again there was a separate hasura for each one. Or he hit the both of them with asachas, and he picked up his two hands and hit one of them with one hand and the other with the other hand. So in all those cases, the Braisa says chayev, then he's chayev, because one way or the other, no matter which way you look at it, either way, one of these men is definitely his father, and therefore there's no question that he ended up injuring or cursing his father. Rabbi Yehuda says no. If he did it for Vasachas, then he's going to be Chayiv Misa, because then when they give Masra, don't do this. It's Asra's Vadai. If he's about to hit the both of them with his two hands at the same time, then clearly one of them is his father, and he's going to be Chayiv Misa for that. But Vazach Hazeh Potter, what Rabbi Yehuda says, if he were to do it one after the other, he would be Potter, because each one would be Hasra's suffix, because they can't give Masra, don't hit this person, he's your father. He's not necessarily his father. So therefore, we see that Rabbi Yehuda holds Hasura Suffet is not a valid Hasura. By the way, Rashi over here explains that Vasachas would mean that he hit the two people with his two hands at the same time. There's other places in Shas where Rashi gives other explanations. The Gemara in Yevamos that mentions this point, and Rashi explains that he took a long stick and hit them both at the same time. And then in Makkos, Rashi explains that he hit them both to the Dibur of the Hasura. So there are different Achronim talk about why Rashi gives a different explanation in each place. But in any case, so whether the most straightforward would be that he did it with Tefillah Dibur, but then that would only be, like we said before, only if it was one action right after the Hasura. If it's a separate action, then it would need a separate Hasura. So instead Rashi needs a different explanation, and then when you have over here the case where he does it with the two people, on the face of it, can it be that he actually hit one of them a millisecond before the other, and we can't tell, and therefore Rashi in Yevamos says that it means he hit them both at the same time, and you have a lot of wonders about why Rashi gives the different explanations in different places. Whatever the case, the point is, we see that Rabbi Yehuda holds a hasra slough. It is not a valid hasra. It has to be when they give masra. It's a known thing that this is an issue. So therefore, when it comes to the gidan nosha, it can't be that the person is about to eat the one from the right leg and they give masra, and then he's about to eat the one from the left leg and they give masra. And Rabbi Yehuda would say, well, no matter what, whichever one is also, the fact is he ate it with hasra, because each of them would be hasra slough. And Rabbi Yehuda holds hasra slough is not a valid hasra. So obviously, therefore, the Mishnah must be talking about he's eating the two gidan noshes at one time with one hasura. So now it's a hasura svada, the same way as this child who's hitting the two possible people who might be his father. But now that we establish that, Uman Tanakama, well, then we would have to ask, who is the Tanakama who is disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda? Given that we only have in our Mishnah Sulhos, so therefore we have to assume, we have two different opinions in our Mishnah. So even with Abban and the Pesugi Alei the Sulhos, could it be the Chachamim who disagree with Sulhos in our Mishnah about where he shechts the middle generation after having shechted the two generations on each side? Well, no, of course they're not going to be Machayev him, they're not going to be Machayev him too, Malchus. Hashto, Mahosam, Gufan Mukhlokin. Again, in our Mishnah, there are Gufan Mukhlokin, and nevertheless, Patriot Abonon, and nevertheless, the Chachamim Patriot him from two Malchus. How much more so over here in the case of the two Gidanoshes, where it's not Gufan Mukhlokin. Evidently, by elimination, the Tana of that mission and the Tanakama of that mission must be Sumchus, because there's no other Tana that we find who holds the Svara that a person can get double Malchus for one action. So there we see that Sumchus holds that it's not just a matter of Gufan Machlokin, even when it's not, then he would still be Machayev two Malchus. So in other words, again, to answer Abaya's original question, then the answer would be that Sumchus holds that across the board, not just in the specific case of the two animals in our mission, because Gufan Machlokin. But again, the answer, the Gemara answer is Loi, not necessarily. In fact, that Mishnah could be talking about where he ate the two Gidanoshes one after the other, and therefore that Mishnah could go like the Chachamim, and therefore we have no proof for it, for what Sumchus holds, because we could say, namely, the Tana of that Mishnah can hold like a different statement of Rabbi Yehuda, who actually says that a Hasra Safek could be a valid Hasra. In other words, that in our case over here, they tell him, don't eat this Gidanoshi, it might be Chayav Malchus. And then they tell him later on, don't eat that Gidanoshi, it might be Chayav Malchus. Between the two of them, he gets in the air, Gidanoshi, that's Chayav Malchus. And there's a different statement of Rabbi Yehuda that holds that is a valid Hasra. In other words, evidently, different Talmudim of Rabbi Yehuda disagreed what he himself held. How so? The Tanya, the Donor of Bryce. The Pasuk says about the Torah Pesach, don't leave from the Korban Pesach anything until the morning, but no sin menu, and anything that's left of it, I'd break over Ishtu Sirikul, then you have to burn in the morning, which actually means the morning of Chol HaMoed, and then the next morning, which is the first day of Yom Tov, means the first day of Chol HaMoed. Anyway, so, Bar Kosef, Litzin Esach, a Loisesech, so the Pesach, therefore, is giving you an Esach after the Loisesech, so it becomes a Lava Nitech Lesech. Don't leave it over, but if you did, then burn it. Loimah Shein, Loikin Olav, and that tells you that therefore there's no Malchus, right? Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, if it hadn't been for the Esa, then in fact the person would get Malchus for leaving over from the Korban Pesach. Rabbi Yaakov says that's not the reason why he's butter. But because the Lav Shein Ben Maisa, because he didn't do anything, he tacitly left it over. And a Lav Shein Ben Maisa, a person does not get Malchus for. Now, so in other words, now this is an example of Asura Slafet. At any time, up until, almost until Chatzos, they could be telling him, don't leave over from the Korban Pesach. And he would say, well, what are you talking about? I still have time. It's not going to become noiser. When he'd be over Midar Isa, but then to give him Hasra exactly before Alos Hashachar with just enough time to give him Hasra, and then he'd be over is very unlikely, so therefore, in other words, that he should be over on the Isra, and therefore, realistically, they're not going to be able to give him Hasra. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda holds that Hasra would be valid. They could be telling him an hour before Alos Hashachar, don't leave over from this Korban Pesach. If you do, you're going to be tired Malchus, and we won't call it Hasra Safek, even though he would say, I have plenty of time. So we see that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Hasra Safek is a valid Hasra. So therefore, so that would be a statement of Rabbi Yehuda that says that it is, and therefore, the Mishnah that we mentioned before, about the two Gidanoshes, then, could be, according to him, the opinion against Rabbi Yehuda, but it could be the Chachamim of our Mishnah, and not Sumchus, and therefore we have no proof whether Sumchus holds his din dafke in our case of Oisav Espinoi, where there's Gufan Machlokin, or does he hold it more generally across the board any time that you have two actions of Isur? Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll analyze this more and see if we can come to a conclusion of what Simchus actually holds.